Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 6th day of March, Anno Domini 2021, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Da, 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 da. And of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We're not really doing the text thing today, so don't get excited by that.
No.
At any rate, Google has warned of reports that a zero-day vulnerability in the Chrome browser is being actively exploited in the wild. The vulnerability was reported by the Microsoft Browser Vulnerability Research Team, because they're using Chrome now as their base, on February 11th and is described as an object lifecycle issue in audio, whatever that means. Google has labeled the vulnerability as a high-severity security flaw and has fixed the issue in the latest Chrome release. Google has not revealed further details concerning how the vulnerability is being exploited or by whom. Google's announcements published on Tuesday also marked the release of Chrome 89 to the stable desktop channel for Windows, Mac, and Linux machines, which is currently rolling out. Users should upgrade to Chrome 89.0.4389.72 immediately.
Left elbow.
Left elbow J. The Chrome 89 release also contains a swath of other security fixes and browser improvements. In total, 47 bugs have been patched, including a high-severity heap buffer overflow in tab strip, another heap buffer overflow in web audio, and a use-after-free issue in WebRTC. A total of 8 vulnerabilities are considered high-severity. Access to bug details and links may be kept restricted until a majority of users are updated with a fix, Google added. We will also retain restrictions if the bug exists in a third-party library that other projects similarly depend on but haven't yet fixed. On February 4th, Google pushed out a fix for a heap buffer overflow in the Chrome V8 JavaScript engine, which is also being actively exploited. This high-severity security flaw was reported by Matthias Bulens on January 24th. This week, Microsoft released urgent updates for 4 of their zero-day vulnerabilities in Exchange Server. Microsoft said the bugs are being exploited in limited targeted attacks and is urging users to update as quickly as possible. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis, would like us to remind you, is Chrome zero-day exploit fixed? And your choices are, I'm up to date, I'll update immediately, let them hack me, Chrome what now, and others. So far, we have 27 votes, and I'm up to date is half of them. So that's nice. And, of course, one person said, let them hack me. Okay. And, of course, if you said other, we'd like you to go to the forums. And, in fact, anybody can go to the forums and put in a comment, and that's easy enough to do. Just go to soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. And scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 6MAR21, Chrome zero-day exploit fixed. And, of course, you can also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Jack did in Rochester, New York. Hi, Jack. What's up?
Hi. It's something that I hope you can help with. It's an unusual thing. For years, we had Frontier as our email provider, and also our internet provider. Well, we switched about a year or so ago to Time Warner Spectrum, and actually talked to you at that time because we were concerned about losing our email addresses. Well, Frontier makes a point of saying on, you know, they use Yahoo now as their mail provider, that you don't lose your address. You keep your Frontier email address for life. And we have about five different addresses. All of them work, and they've worked for the full year. However, about a week and a half ago, one of the addresses stopped working. It wouldn't accept our email. On using Outlook, you would get an IMAP server disconnected notice. I tried going to the webmail and signing in on webmail, which works fine for all of our other addresses, but this particular one, again, doesn't like the password. Somehow it got reset. So they, you know, they provide ways for you to reset the password, but none of them work. The phone number doesn't work if you're not a Frontier customer. The reset your password will send you an email to reset your password, but it's sent to the email that doesn't work, that we can't get into. Is there any hope at all?
Are you, when you do webmail, are you doing it at Frontier or at Yahoo?
Actually, I've done it both ways. Login.frontier.com/webmail. And it also comes up sometimes as Yahoo. I can't say for sure that, like, it comes up as Frontier/Yahoo. And the URL up in the box says mail.yahoo.com.
Okay, that's, yeah.
Yeah, there is a problem with Outlook not supporting the OAuth that Yahoo uses, so you need to create an application-specific password for Outlook. But your webmail should work with that password. And the only thing we've been able to do with our customers that happens is you call Frontier and have them reset it.
Yeah, when you call Frontier, of course, there's a automated phone tree, and they want to know whether you're, you know, internet or phone or whatever. And, of course, we happen to be a phone customer, but this is an internet problem. And I actually haven't been able to get through to them no matter which way I go.
Have you tried logging into your Frontier account editor, which would be a different password than your Frontier email?
The account editor.
Yeah. That would let you change your password for your sub-accounts. You do have to remember the password for your master account.
Yeah, which we do. So I have gone into account@frontier.com.
Yeah.
You know, /editor/email. And I didn't have any joy there, but I could try again. What should I look for?
There is a button that says change password.
Okay. But go in with my main email address.
Right, your Master Frontier account. And okay. Well, actually, that brings up a question. Do you have a Master account and sub-accounts, or are they each a Master account?
No, they're Master and sub-accounts,
okay.
I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I'll post this page too from Frontier. There's two phone numbers on the Get Help page.
Oh, okay.
Two different 800 numbers, which is interesting.
On your page?
On the Frontier Change My Password page.
But we will post a link to that on our page in about a minute.
Okay, great. I appreciate being able to talk to you guys.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Okay, sure. Thanks.
I like the fact that it says change your password in three steps, not three easy steps.
Right,
because
right.
They aren't that easy.
they aren't that easy. Yeah, we have always recommended that you have at least two accounts. One, if you want to have one with your provider, that's fine. But it's a problem if you change your provider. And therefore, you should have at least one other that isn't linked to any provider.
Yeah.
Whether that's a Gmail account or an iCloud account or a Microsoft Live account.
And many of us have our original ISP emails because that's the only possibility there was. There were no other services.
Well, that's exactly right. And it's not, I'm not saying you shouldn't have those.
Yeah.
But you should have another one and then set that as the recovery.
Yeah.
For your main one.
And remember that one too, because we had a customer this morning, got a new computer, didn't remember his Gmail account password. Well, I don't have one. Sorry, but yes, you do.
I just got a call from somebody who doesn't want to go on the air.
Sure.
But they said that Time Warner will not allow you to do that from a Frontier will not allow you to do that from a non-Frontier IP address.
Oh, no kidding.
Spectrum will, but Frontier will not.
When they're still a Frontier phone customer, so they should talk to them.
Huh.
So well, you've got to find a friend's house that has Frontier service.
You should be able to log on at Yahoo and right. Do it all directly through Yahoo.
From anywhere in the world, on any ISP.
Right. And they have said time and time again, you have a Yahoo address.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, yes, it still says at frontiernet.net or whatever it says.
Yeah, it's a Yahoo account with a Frontier address, just to be extra confusing.
Right. So you should be able to go to Yahoo, sign in with all your Frontier information.
Yeah,
and still be able to do all the changing and et cetera but you can't do it from a non-Frontier IP. That's interesting.
We've done it. Well, yeah, we've done it at our office and using Spectrum, but we always have to call.
Right.
You can never. They don't have a reset instruction process. Internet only. It's always you have to call and verify your identity.
Right. Interesting. Well, that's just another reason if you're going to leave Frontier. Get another address. Start using it.
Yeah, get another address. And if you're using Frontier now, get a new address now and start telling everyone you know your new address.
Right, so if you decide to move, you're good. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Pittsford, New York. Hi, Mike, what's up?
Hey, you guys, how you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. I have a 2015, early 2015 MacBook Pro with El Capitan. And this week, the mail app would crash upon opening. You try to launch it, it would launch briefly, you'd see the mailboxes, and then it would disappear, and then you'd get a, send error report to Apple. And I don't know how to get it.
They never tell you anything. It's not like they reply.
Well, yeah. The error message is basically it's the stack dump, so the programmer knows what happened. It doesn't help you any.
Yeah.
What we have often seen, because you're running such an older version of the OS, it doesn't support the latest web protocols. Somebody probably sent you a highly customized HTML email, and your mail program is trying to display that for you, doesn't understand the code, and crashes. So one of the things you can do is log into your webmail and delete those messages that may be causing the problem. Let me see if I can find, there's a way to open mail without opening a message. The other option we'd highly recommend is to upgrade the OS if you can, to at least 10.13, High Sierra, because then you'll get the, newer, security protocols, newer web protocols, and things will be running much better.
Do you think that the, a MacBook Pro that's that old would be able to be updated?
Sure, but and you can also upgrade it to a newer OS. In fact, it would even run Big Sur, but we usually don't recommend that unless you have a solid state drive and 16 gigs of RAM. And then going to Catalina requires 64-bit software. So if you have any older third-party apps, that generates a different problem. So this free system upgrade can end up costing a lot of money if you have to upgrade your other apps. So that's why High Sierra 10.13 is probably the best bet until you make sure everything you have is compatible with something even newer.
Okay, I'll give that a try. Okay,
no problem. Yeah, and I'm gonna find the link. There's a secret key. It's either the option key or command key, something like that, that you hold down while you open the mail app, and so it doesn't try to open a message.
Okay.
He'll find that and post it on our website at soundbites.org.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, it's getting harder and harder to run old software.
Yeah,
and that includes old operating systems. Protocols are changing for the better. As Steve said, one of the things is newer systems have different HTML protocols.
Mm-hmm.
better ones, faster, cleaner, more secure, et cetera, et cetera. And older systems may not understand those, and therefore, as he said, cause problems up to and including crashing when you try to run them.
We have seen this a few times with people that have Roadrunner email, and it's always an ad for Spectrum's new email service and their new internet service and their new Super WhizBang. But it's a highly customized HTML page with, you know, flashing this and giant that. And
yeah, right. There's a webmail interface, though.
For whatever your provider is, you can open webmail and delete the message from there. That used to be a big trick in the olden days of dial-up, that sometimes there was a problem. Your mail would feel like it hung, and it's because someone sent you a picture.
Right.
So it's a 100 meg picture, and it just took forever to download. You log into webmail and delete it there.
Yeah, right.
And then it can download on your dial-up.
Right. In general, if you're having an email problem, try signing in via the web browser. Almost every email system has a web interface somewhere.
And you have to know it. So Frontiers is webmail.frontier.com. There's a pattern here. Spectrum's is webmail.spectrum.com.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just mail, as in mail.yahoo.com.
Yep.
I don't know if webmail would work. I'm actually logged into my Yahoo account. I'm very surprised. I have 4 emails, all of them from Yahoo.
Yeah. You haven't logged in a while.
No, I logged in at the very end of November, also on this show.
Yeah, someone had a Yahoo question.
Yes, exactly.
It's about the time I log in, too.
I don't really use my old Yahoo account for much, so I don't really pay much attention to it. But nobody knows what the name is, and it is not my name. So I don't even get spam there. I'm kind of shocked.
Yeah, that's all I get at my Yahoo account.
Nobody's found it because of the oddness of the name. And I'm not going to tell you what that name is. No, I'm not.
I know Nick is pretty odd.
Nick is pretty odd. .com. I should get that. I don't know. It seems that I've been, I guess, lucky. I just haven't had anybody catch me. Of course, I don't. There doesn't seem to be anything in the spam folder. My spam folder is empty.
A lot of times, it's harvested email addresses from all those CCs that people put on your messages, where they get your message from.
Stop using CCs. Use BCCs.
Blind carbon copy.
Which means nobody else sees those email addresses.
And for those of you that don't remember, carbon paper was... you could make copies, multiple copies at one time by writing on a piece of paper, only once, and you got 10 copies if you were pushed hard enough.
No, you really don't want 10
maybe
copies.
Two.
Two or three is at the most. And the same when you're typing.
Yep.
There used to be was it the IBM? Was it IBM had a setting for carbon paper so it struck harder?
Yeah, probably.
I don't remember.
The old Selectrics, that was such a big thing for a long time.
I don't remember which.
Ask Tom Hanks. He collects old typewriters.
Yeah, well, he should.
In fact, he gifts old typewriters to people he really likes.
That's nice. I still have in the attic, I still have the little cheap portable typewriter that I wrote all my papers on in college. And made money.
Yep.
I've said this. I type people's papers for $1 a page, and I'd write them for $5 a page. You'd be surprised at how many people would pay me to write their papers for them. And I took exactly the same amount of care with theirs that I did with mine. That is to say, almost none. Still got through with it. Okay, our next caller is Dan from Webster, New York. Hiya, Dan. What's up?
Hey there. I'm a former Frontier employee.
Aha!
And I want to give some inside tips out.
Please.
First, you can contact tech support directly through chat.
Oh.
That is on the website somewhere. It's been so long that I don't know where it is, but it's there.
Yeah, I posted the link on how to change your password, and there's an option for call and chat.
Yeah. The chat is first. And also, when you do reach someone, the trick for the finding your account is tell them it ends with a .1. Frontier uses a strange and wonderful system. A .0 is an active account. A .1 is an inactive account.
Oh.
Interesting. So that's why they can't find you when you're not a Frontier Internet subscriber anymore.
Right. But if you tell them, hey, I'm a .1, and if they're a reasonably competent tech, they will find the account.
You just said the magic words there.
Interesting. I'm sure I know some Frontier techs, and they are very competent.
Yep.
But I'm sure not everybody hires at any level is in the most competent person in the building.
Right.
So.
Well, when they shut down Rochester, they lost a whole bunch of competent people.
Yeah.
And things went downhill from there.
Remember, by definition, half of the people are below average in competence.
That's very true. Very true.
Well, those are great tips, Dan. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Good to talk with Nick and the nice guys.
There you go.
Nice.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Very nice. See that? You don't just get advice, you get tips, you get understandings of what's going on, and it's all good. Wow, we've already got 88 votes in the poll. I love to see people voting in the poll. It makes me happy. So please go to the poll and vote. Soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, and in the upper left-hand corner is a link to the poll. It's in red. You shouldn't really miss it. I'm very pleased to see that that there are 88 votes in the poll so far. So far, the number one is I'm up to date with. Of course, the Wiseacres would let them hack me right behind it, 32-28. Absolutely. Please vote in the poll. Let us know what you think in the forums. Of course, you can... like I said, we're not doing much with the text messaging today, but we are on the live stream, the Soundbites live stream. 21 of you are watching it so far. Nobody has hit the thumbs up button yet. So sad. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That right there, that would be Soundbites. Right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 38 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we've got, I'm delighted to say we've got 92 votes, I think it is, in the poll right now. And
it's interesting what triggers the polls.
Yeah, some weeks we get like 30.
Yep.
And the last couple weeks we've gotten significantly more, which is very nice. I'd love to hit 100.
Maybe more people are stuck inside because it's really cold.
Yeah, that might be it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joel from Pittsford, New York. Hiya, Joel. What's up?
Okay. Hi, guys. I've got an issue on the new Mac. I have a fairly extensive iTunes library that I have stored on my Synology server. I can access that library from iTunes on my PC, from my iPhone and my iPad. I'm trying to access that library from music on my new Mac. and I've set the folder directory under preferences to the location of music, but I still can't see the music in the app. Can you help?
Is it Big Sur or is it Catalina?
It's Big Sur.
Yeah, that's probably part of the problem. Everything is different under Big Sur, we're seeing. And they started in Catalina with the music app instead of the iTunes app.
Yeah.
There is a tech note. Let me find it. You have to keep the XML file on the internal drive, but then the data can be stored on another drive. Can you mount the Synology as an icon on the desktop and see the files that way?
I can see it in Finder.
Yeah. What file system is the Synology using? Do you know if it's HFS or FAT?
I do not know. It's whatever the default was when I installed it.
Well, he can get to it from his PC, so it's more likely.
Well, it's probably using SMB file sharing protocol, but I'm wondering what the file system on the disk is. It's probably Synology's XFAT, maybe, something like that.
It shows up in the Finder perfectly. I can navigate to the files in the Finder, in the music folder. But if I go and find the preferences, that allows me to set that folder as the file folder for music.
Where the music is. Some people have had luck with putting an alias to that music folder in their home folder, where iTunes, the music app now expects the music to be. And I did find that tech note about where you put your music and how you get it to organize. Part of me is worried. What systems do the other computers run that can see it? Are they still running iTunes, or do they have the new music app?
No, on the PC it's iTunes.
That's true. You said PC.
And on the iPhone and iPad, of course, it's music.
Yeah. One of the things that may work is, if I remember right, Synology has an iTunes server built in, or an iTunes app you can download, iTunes server app you can download and install. And what that lets the music app see it as a remote computer rather than a remote file store.
Okay.
I think Nick is looking for that app for you.
No.
Yeah, so I posted the one about from Apple on moving your music file, or telling music where your library is. And let me see if I can find the one in Synology, because I know a few of the Synologies I've set up, they've had options for installing other types of services. So you can turn it into an iTunes music server. And then your computer sees it as a remote computer.
Okay, well, I'll take a look at that. Thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
Yep, you're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, I posted a couple of them. Yeah, the iTunes library file, you leave the .itl, you leave in your system drive.
There's a YouTube video, iTunes configuration with Synology.
That's from that
guy, Nick. Which is not me.
That's good.
In the meantime, we had a question on the YouTube chat from Mark. And Mark wanted to know, what is a Wi-Fi mesh system? It's mesh with an H, M-E-S-H. And basically,
it replaces the Wi-Fi mess, M-E-S-S.
Yeah. and I wonder if this is the same Mark calling. But we'll answer it here if it is Mark from Greece, the same person. All right, we'll take Mark first. Mark from Greece, what's up?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I am good. Two things. One thing, I've got a Vizio TV.
Yeah.
Okay. It's fairly new. I bought it a year and a half ago. And it only recognizes drives in the USB that are in FAT. It will not recognize NTFS drives at all.
Right.
And the only way I worked around that was to go to XFAT. It does recognize XFAT.
Right.
Like in, I've got a lot of video that's in 4K. And I can't fit them on a drive that's got FAT 32 on it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the only workaround I found on that, that I had to do FAT. It was very bizarre that the TV only recognizes FAT. Even my Blu-ray player will recognize each the other format.
Right.
You know? Weird. But anyways, the other question I had, Nick, for you was, have you ever used DaVinci Resolve?
No, what is it?
It's a video editing program.
For what operating systems?
As far as I know, Windows.
Yeah. No, I have not.
I have heard of it as a less expensive alternative to Adobe Premiere.
Yeah, from what I understand, movie studios use the paid version, but there's a free version also.
Oh, interesting.
And I was just wondering if you've ever used it or known anybody that used it. And
I'm afraid I do not, but if anybody out there has used DaVinci Resolve on Windows, please call in and tell us what you think.
Yeah, I'm really interested in it because if I like it, I want to buy it. But I just want to know a little about it before I start.
Oh, it's from Blackmagic, and it runs on all OSs.
Ah, okay.
So it's designed, you have your Blackmagic capture card, which is one of the most popular video capture cards to tie into camera systems.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it meshes with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I get it.
But it looks like it can do video editing from any source.
Right, right.
Yeah. And it even accommodates you to be able to master in HDR.
Oh, interesting.
Nice.
Well, yeah. It sounds like something to take a look at. Thanks.
Yeah. I was just wondering if I'm going to look into it. I just, like I said, I always like to get a little idea before I download something and then go, you know, oh, gosh, I hate this.
Right.
I have to get rid of it, you know? So.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if anybody has anything to say about it, I'd love to hear about it.
Right. And I do hope that you're using Revo Uninstaller.
Yeah. Well, I use IOBit.
Yeah. Same. Okay. Good. Yeah. Good. Yep.
Yeah, that's what I use. But I don't like to, I don't want to install it and then have to uninstall it. I've got an SSD, and I do enough of that. I don't want to keep doing it all the time. So a lot of times, if I can find a program that's portable, I'll use the portable program.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so I don't have to go through that baloney, because I can use the portable program off of a flash drive, or I can use it off of my a regular hard drive.
Right, of course. So, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay. You have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. Thanks. All right. Bye. Let's get back to Mark's question from YouTube. A Wi-Fi mesh system. With most Wi-Fi systems, you have one access point, they're called. You have one access point, and that serves however big an area that it broadcasts to. You can also, of course, put an extender on that will extend the range. But there are mesh systems where you have...
Well, you say the big problem with an extender is it cuts your bandwidth in half.
Right.
Because half of it goes back to the main access point, and only half of it goes forward as an extension.
Right. And a mesh system does things a little differently. You get much more of your bandwidth going everywhere. But a mesh system works in an interesting way. Let's say I've got a... I live in one of those old shotgun apartments, you know, that's all one hallway down the center and it's long. And my Wi-Fi will not reach from the one end where it comes into the wall, because they don't care, and to the other end. So I need to put a series of maybe a couple of different things, or I've got an upstairs and a downstairs and a basement, and I can't reach them all. But with a mesh system, each system is an equal partner in the network, and each system talks to every other system in the network so that you get full coverage everywhere with much less data loss because of backtalk.
Yeah, if you could get your ISP to run the cable wire to the center of the house for the internet service, then you put your first Wi-Fi router there in the center of the house. That's the best way to do it.
That is the best way to do it. They
have an unfortunate habit of wanting to go to an outside wall to make it easier to run the wire.
Right. I was lucky enough to be able to get them to put it right in the computer room, which is kind of central to the house. Where I can't reach, of course, as I've said many times, is the far side of the pond, which apparently is a very important place to have Wi-Fi. So I
need a cantenna.
Fixed that problem. Yeah, exactly. Mesh Wi-Fi systems from a number of manufacturers, and each of them runs pretty much the same way. It just it lets you have multiple access points in your house or wherever, and they all talk to each other, so you can get a stronger signal in each place by putting, you know, where the signal starts to drop off, you just put another mesh point.
Most of the mesh routers are rated in their square footage, which is almost a little misleading, because it's more important on how many walls it has to go through and what's in the wall than it is on the actual square footage.
Right.
Yeah, a standard Wi-Fi access point will do 300 feet line of sight with no obstructions.
Right.
And that's bigger than most houses.
Right.
But you put a wall in the way and now you got, you know, 10 feet.
Right. That's exactly
and
right.
And the other thing that makes it a little confusing is that most of the wireless companies, they will still have their traditional standalone, you know, one router. And then they'll have a different brand, which is their mesh routers.
Right.
So you kind of have to make sure you know what you're getting.
What you're getting.
If you have a small enough apartment or house with not that many walls, you're probably okay with a single access point.
Right.
But if you have trouble reaching the internet in you know, that back bedroom, then you probably would be better off with a mesh.
And as we've said before, you can download for every phone a Wi-Fi analyzer. That will show you the strength of the signal and what channels it's on and what other Wi-Fi signals are in the area. And what's nice about that is you can tune things. So, for example, with our house, the TV in one of the rooms in the kitchen, actually, very weak signal. Had trouble getting, you know, Netflix or anything else. So I blew up the Wi-Fi analyzer, loaded that up, and realized that every neighbor in line of sight was broadcasting on exactly that same channel, 6 or whichever one is the most common.
Yeah.
Because they all come set for that.
Yep.
But nobody was on 14. So I went up to my router and I changed my channel to 14. And I shouldn't say this in case any of my neighbors are listening. They'll change theirs just to pork me off. So I changed mine to 322. And nobody else is on that channel. And so my signal got super strong and super fast. And my wife is much happier now because things load faster and there's, you know, there's very few dropouts or anything like that. So she's a very happy little camper now. And that's all due to a Wi-Fi analyzer and changing the channel that I was on.
Yeah, if you remember the early days of portable phones in your house, if you happened to be on the same channel as your neighbor, you could hear each other's conversations. And so the phones usually had a switch on the bottom to switch channels.
And sometimes they would ring. Yeah, they actually ring when the neighbor got a call.
Yep.
Yeah. So if you're, and it really doesn't hurt every once in a while to walk around your house. You'd be surprised at where the signal drops off, and that's because there's wiring running in the ceiling or a heat duct or, you know, all kinds of things that you can't see, but Wi-Fi can't get through. Particularly if you have an older house. I've said this many times. I have one curved wall in my house, and it's just full of chicken wire. Well, there's no signal on the planet that's going to get through that. So I had to, with a mesh router, I can do a kind of a ricochet. thing. If, depending on where I put it, it'll then broadcast into that room through the open door. The only way to be aware of stuff like that is to either be able to see in the radio spectrum or run a Wi-Fi analyzer and let it do the seeing for you. So, and they're free. Every phone system. There's only two anymore. There's the Android-based ones,
mm-hmm.
and there's the iPhone, the iOS-based ones, I guess, if it's a multiple version of the iPhone. But both of those systems have Wi-Fi analyzers that you can run and see what sort of signal you're getting. Who else is run? I mean, you see them all when you look at your Wi-Fi stuff. You'll see, you know, however many other stations are broadcasting in your area, but that doesn't generally tell you what channel they're on. And by running that Wi-Fi analyzer, you can see which channels are free. And by picking a free channel, I was able to get a much cleaner, much clearer, and therefore much subjectively faster signal.
Yeah.
So that was the kind of thing that is important to pay attention to for your.
There's also a lot of confusion between 2.4 and 5G. Some routers have something they call 5G, which is now getting confused with cellular 5G. They're completely different. It's yeah. In the wireless, it's 5 gigahertz, so it should be 5GHZ.
Right.
The standard Wi-Fi frequency is 2.4 gigahertz. And that can be quite crowded because that's what do they call it? The junk spectrum,
right.
Junk band. Every wireless device uses 2.4 gigahertz. Your microwave oven is 2.4 gigahertz.
Right.
And so 5 gigahertz was developed for Wi-Fi signals to be less crowded, but it doesn't go through walls as well. So again, if you don't have very many walls, you may get a better signal on 5 gigahertz than you do on 2.4 gigahertz.
And it's tough all the way around, as a matter of fact. So, and most Wi-Fi analyzers, you can switch between the 2.4 and 5 gigahertz bands, so you can see on each one which is going. That also depends on your devices.
Yep.
There are a number of devices that will not do 5 gigahertz.
We had a customer, I set her up with a new mesh network, and we checked her Apple TV, and it was working fine. But then she called later on saying, well, my Roku's not working. And so, well, okay. My first thought was, well, your Apple TV is working, and then they do this.
They do the same thing. Right.
So she had trouble getting her Roku. She finally found someone at Roku she could call, and that concerned us a little bit. Can you call anyone? And they said it's because the Roku was 5G, she needed to change it to 2.4, and she didn't want to downgrade. Didn't understand that wasn't really a downgrade.
Right.
So she went out and bought a new TV.
Great. Good for her.
So we can add that to our the battery's dead by a new computer.
Right.
My Roku won't connect by a new TV.
Nice. So it makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me. All right. Shall we hit the break and then take our calls after? Yeah. All right. All right.
Top of the hour coming up.
Top of the hour coming up. I want to, that's it. We're done. The first hour is done. We have people on the line. Please stay on the line. We will get to you after this break. We are going to take a slightly longer break, but you're only halfway through this show, so we've got a whole nother hour, the longest running computer show in the known universe coming up. That's right. We're going to have more Steve Ray, more Michael Oden, more Nick Francesco, and a whole lot more you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, wow, 1-800-790-0415. And we will be back very shortly with a whole lot more sound bites on the truly great and truly grateful to you, because with your generous support, we remain member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Before we get back to the phones, I just want to say we talked in the first hour about Yahoo, so I actually logged into my account again and discovered that I have been a member of Yahoo for 19 years. And they have, you know, here are some other memorable things that happened in 2001, because this is actually from November of last year. Wikipedia went live in 2001. The iPod was released in 2001. And the first Harry Potter movie premiered in 2001. And I joined Yahoo.
Yep.
So that's just there. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Jim. What's up?
Hi, fellas. Hey, I have one of those mesh systems.
Yeah.
He's got it for me for Christmas. It's called the Deco M9 Mesh Wi-Fi Network. It comes with three what I'm going to call broadcast units. And what I had to do was put those units, plug them into the wall, into a regular wall socket, and that seems to get away from that transmission through the wall problem.
Not exactly. Those are from TP-Link, which are a well-known brand. They need to be plugged into the wall for power. There used to be a thing where it would put Ethernet over power, so you could get networking in other areas, but that never worked very well because there's so much other noise on the power lines. They are a Wi-Fi mesh system, and they're one of the more popular ones as well. But a lot of times they'll come in a three pack for larger homes. In fact, we got a kick out of, we sell a lot of the Eero brand, and then Amazon bought them, and we're not sure anymore.
Yeah, right.
But they're like $100 a piece, or you can get three for $225.
Yeah.
Well, actually, yeah. I think my kids got it for $170.
That's nice. It's a good price.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's all I had to contribute. Maybe it wasn't as important as I thought.
Well, no, it's a good thing to know. Thank you. Mesh networks are becoming more and more popular, and because they cover so much better.
Yeah.
You know, so, and they're now pretty inexpensive comparatively, and certainly fairly easy to set up. With most of them nowadays, once you set up the first one, which you, of course, have to do, the rest of them just pretty much fall in line when you plug them in.
Yeah.
So it's pretty nice. Thanks.
The one thing I get annoyed at as a longtime user is that most of the mesh systems you set up with an app now. They don't have a built-in Wi-Fi router. And one of the problems now is that I can't manage our customers' networks.
Right.
Because I have to log into their app account, which means I have to log out of someone else's app account and go through the whole security process. It's annoying.
Well,
so I always have to get one of their
phones.
Right. I have to get one of their phones to do it,
right.
Which is a little tough at a business because then whose phone do you use?
Right.
So the other day I'd set one up and we used the office manager's phone. She's been there for 40 years. She'll probably be there for a while longer.
Or she's going to retire pretty soon.
Yeah. No one's going to let her retire.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah. Once you get a good office manager,
yeah,
you do what you got to do to hang on to them.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Victor. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I'm hoping you can prevent me from slamming my printer against a desk. So
sure.
I have an Envy 5540 by HP, and I got a couple of error messages. One said, your photo tray is out of paper. Well, I don't have any paper in it. I never used it. And the second error message says, you have a paper jam. I checked. There's no paper jam. I restarted the printer. I've uninstalled it and reinstalled the printer. I've restarted my computer. You think it's just shot?
there's a sensor in there that thinks there's a jam, probably in the photo tray. And what we have seen occasionally is a scrap of paper from a previous jam get stuck in there. And you sometimes have to pick it up and shake it.
Yeah, sometimes that's what you have to do, and that's the most satisfying,
yeah.
frankly.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking I may end up doing because it's not working. But
And it's hard to actually get inside some
He's
of those.
He's doing it right now.
Yeah.
You can hear him.
I'm doing
yeah.
it right now as we speak.
Yep. It's often hard to get inside some of those printers because they don't have doors that open on them anymore to find out where that that paper – it's one of the paper sensors is blocked. We've seen bottle caps fall down inside of printer paper feeds. We had a golf tee once. That was interesting.
Interesting.
Yep.
Wow. Well, I have none of them in there, and I just—you heard me just slam it a little bit. So
yeah.
I'm going to try to see what happens. If
you might want
to
try putting something in the photo tray and see if you can at least get it to feed a piece of paper through that tray.
It may be that at some point you accidentally tried to print a photo,
mm-hmm.
and it wanted to use the photo tray.
Yeah, I never did. I never.
I didn't say you did it on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I went in the settings on the computer, and it lists photo tray or regular letter tray. Because I thought maybe that's somehow it got changed, and this on letter tray. So the settings, as far as I see, are right. But I'll just cut a small piece of paper and stick it in the photo tray and see what happens. I've got nothing to lose.
Yeah,
you're right, exactly.
I am also seeing something at HP about making sure the tray is seated correctly. If it's in there, because you just shook it. If it's a little crooked, it may think there's something wrong because it's not seated, and there's probably sensors to make sure that the tray is straight.
Well, I'm going to have to slam it a little bit more then, I guess, to
yeah.
see if I could do it. All right, thank you, guys.
All right, good luck, Victor.
You're welcome. Goodbye.
All right.
Yeah, a lot of those HP printers were interesting because they had the regular 8.5x11 tray on the bottom, and then above that, pretty deep inside the printer, is a 4x6 photo tray that you
right.
don't – often people don't even know it's in there or not. The fact that he's getting a message saying it's empty, which is true, makes me think it's been told to print inadvertently to that tray, and
right.
it can't because there's nothing in there. So maybe take a piece of regular paper and cut it to 4x6 so it fits in there and instead of wasting an actual photo print
right.
and see if that'll work.
Right. We're closing in on 100... votes in the poll. I'm very excited about that. Please, if you have not voted, please do so. We'd like to see 100. That would be kind of fun. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Jim. What's up?
Okay, I've got a whole bunch of desktop computers that I've stopped using and a couple laptops. How do I ghost the machines if I want to get rid of them? I know I could Google it, I suppose, but...
You don't want to ghost it. You want to deban it.
Say again? Spell it.
Yeah, you don't want to use ghost. You want to use D-band. D as in dog, B as in boy, A as in apple, N as in Nicholas.
It's Derek's Boot and Nuke.
Right.
It's a free open source program that you download onto a flash drive, for example, and then you boot that flash drive, and it nukes the internal drive and erases any data.
Right, and you get it at dband.org.
Dband.com. Okay, now, once I do this, can the computer still be used?
You would be able to put another operating system on it.
Okay.
It will be without operating system.
Yes. Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
Yeah, and there are multiple levels at which you can erase it. If you're going to give it away or whatever, you really want to use the highest level, which takes days, but you don't care.
They do have an enterprise edition that you can get a certificate of erasure.
Right.
Probably for HIPAA and FIPS regulations.
Right. It does not, in fact, do SSDs, at least yet.
That's the way SSDs work. There's something called wear leveling. So on an ordinary spinning disk, when it writes data, it just writes it sequentially to the track, and you can erase that easily.
Right.
With an SSD, it randomly scatters data around the disk so that all the little data cells wear out at the same time instead of having a hotspot that dies fast. So... And the SSD controller takes care of that. So there's no easy way for the computer to say write to this specific cell. So even when you tell it to erase an SSD, it can't do this low level erase where it makes sure all the cells are zeroed, because the hardware doesn't give it that deep a control.
Right.
All right, great. I will look into this.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye.
I think we talked about that last week, too. It's 2 weeks in a row. It's
yeah, we might have.
Popular program, suddenly.
But, yeah, D-Band is a pretty hot little program, and we're pretty happy that it exists, actually, because it makes, you know, there are some fairly complex ways to erase a hard drive. But Derek, yep, whoever Derek is, made it all easy. Just yep, put the thing in, boot it up, and you've nuked your drive. It's that simple.
Steve Gibson was talking about putting in an erase function in his SpinRite recovery program because he's learned so much about how drives work. And he jokingly was saying that there was so much outcry in his forums about do not put an erase button next to the fix button. So he's going to make a completely separate program to erase your drive.
Right.
In fact, he's got one out now called InitDisk that does a lot of that. And people have been commenting that it will resurrect old disks you thought were bad because Windows wouldn't initialize them.
Right.
And so when he's dealing with SpinRite, the first thing he needs to do is read the disk. And so he's got these really deep programs to read the disk. He's been able to write this program, I'll post a link, called Init Disk, that will initialize the disk to get it ready to put SpinRite on. And as a byproduct, it has fixed a lot of flash drives that people have been telling him that, you know, this disk Windows wouldn't format it. It kept saying error, and now it suddenly works again. Thanks.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Brighton, New York. Hi, Jim, what's up?
Hi, I have a question concerning loading an operating system like a Windows 10 using the procedure that's on the Microsoft website. It seems like they may have changed something, so you no longer can get all the way through the installation without first completely installing some apps that they want you to have. Have you had that experience?
Well, there's the apps that are bundled in with Windows. You can't avoid those, like Paint and WordPad and things right, like that.
No, there's something that I wasn't even familiar with. And I didn't want to even go through the procedure because I'm trying to, like, refurbish some computers to give to people. And I'm just kind of stumped at this point.
And you're using the Windows Media Creation Tool?
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't seen anything like that. You download the installer, put it on the flash disk, and...
Are you sure you're getting it from Microsoft?
Yes, I am, because I go right to their download site.
No, you don't go to the download site. You go to the Windows Media Creation Tool site.
Well, you can get to it from the Microsoft download site, so you do get to the same okay, place you're talking about.
Right. Yeah. So you, for those who don't know what we're talking about, Microsoft does have a website where you can download a version of Windows 10, either Home or Pro.
Well, that's
the
exactly
install.
Where yeah, I'm going. Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
So
and,
you can that, you can do, but I don't. I mean, I've used it myself, and
yeah,
I haven't.
I just used it last week.
I haven't had to install anything else, so I'm not entirely sure what happened.
You have to pick what language you want to download it, but then once you download and make this installer, you can just use that installer on any number of computers you want.
Yeah, well, that's what I used to do. And I was really surprised that I came across this problem.
What apps is it trying to get you to install?
Sorry, again?
What apps is it trying to get you to install?
Oh, I didn't really even write those down. They just wouldn't let me go past it. It used to be when you were putting some program in and it wanted to do things like this, it would give you like a button to skip it for now and do it later. But here you're just forced to go through step by step the way they wanted you to do it.
Yeah, it's just a standard install. You pick the language, you pick the drive you want to put it on, and hit install.
That's what it's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and that's what it did when I downloaded it last week. Maybe you got a bad download?
Well, I don't know. Were you trying to download Home or Pro?
Yeah, Windows 10 Pro.
It actually doesn't give you that option. It's just Windows 10, 32, 64. And then during the install process, you tell it which subversion to use.
Right. Well, I'm wondering.
Which depends on which license key you have.
Right. Right. And for those of you listening, it's not a free version of Windows. You still have to have a license key to activate.
That's true. And I do have the licenses to do that, but I can't get to the point where it's going to matter because I can't get to, it doesn't matter if you put that key in when it first comes up, right after you choose, you know, what English and keyboard and so forth.
Well, listen, without knowing what those apps are, I can't give you any sort of advice. I mean, they may not be apps. They may be updates. It may be saying, do you want to you have to install the security updates, for example.
Well, it didn't sound like any of that stuff that I think I'd be familiar with.
Right.
But I'll have to go back through that again and
write down what those apps are. I'm sorry, can't really help you without knowing what they are.
Yeah.
Because I've never seen them.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was something that was just happening new, but maybe
it might also be that they were not apps but drivers for specific devices you have. That Windows on that laptop or desktop.
Yeah. It sure didn't sound like that, but maybe you're right. Maybe it's something I just didn't recognize. So I'll have to go back and see, dig through the details, I guess.
Right.
Thanks for your help so far.
Sorry.
Yeah. You bet. Bye, guys.
I'll download it right now and see what happens.
Yeah, I'm not. Like I said, I've installed it several dozen times, maybe, and I have not seen.
The one annoyance now is that you always because if you download it right now, you're going to get 2020 H2.
Right.
Which, if you're installing onto a new machine, it's probably okay. You get the latest versions, but the problems with upgrading an existing machine is that you end up with possible software conflicts.
Well, it's all got to do with the registry.
Yeah,
that's a piece of junk to begin with, and Microsoft has never made it better. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Hiya, James. What's up?
Oh, hello. I changed my settings on my laptop last week to go into sleep mode after 15 minutes. But when I go to restart up again, say I go back in a half an hour, my internet connection is lost and I have to reboot the laptop. Do you know how to cure this?
What operating system are you running?
Windows 7 and Chrome.
Yeah.
Are you having a wireless connection or a wired connection?
No, I'm wired. Wired. It's a laptop wired.
Because I've seen that with wireless, where the wireless takes longer to wake up than the rest of the computer.
Windows 7.
It wakes up all right. It's just that the internet connection is lost. And
right.
I have to reboot, and it's fine. And this just happened. I changed it a couple weeks ago. I never had it before. I don't know.
Right. So, no internet.
No internet. But my connections and all, it's just when I, on the sleep mode, you know how you go back a half hour later and it wakes up? That's when it says the internet connection. It's about 90% of the time. It's not all the time, but I do have an old laptop and Windows 7 and Chrome, whatever. I don't know. It's not a big problem.
So are you saying the Ethernet disappears from your network settings? Or it's there but not connected?
It's not connected. It says the internet connection is gone. But when I reboot, it's fine.
What says that?
On the laptop screen, it says it.
What screen?
Is it just
is it a notification on the desktop?
Yeah.
I would suggest going into network settings and checking your Ethernet connection to make sure it's still there and see what the properties are set to. It should be set to DHCP. Maybe that's part of the problem.
What you might do is, and this is counterintuitive, which is why you've probably not seen it before. You might find that in power settings, if you go to power management, each device is listed.
Mm-hmm.
And you should have an option that says allow the computer to turn off this device to save power. Mm-hmm. Uncheck that for the wireless connection.
Or what wired, that means, or Ethernet,
or
too.
Or Ethernet, whichever one you have.
Okay.
Now, what that means is it's going to draw a little more power. So on a desktop, it doesn't matter. But on a laptop, of course, you may find that you run out of battery faster if you leave it off for a couple of days. But that's what you have to do once. And the other problem is, are you finding this issue on a desktop or a laptop?
Laptop.
Yeah. If you're only letting it sit for 15 or 20 minutes, not a big deal at all.
No.
But, you know, if you're letting it set for a couple of days, it's going to be an issue in terms of battery life. But
no, I close it down every night.
Yeah, okay, then. Go into under network adapters.
Mm-hmm.
So basically you want to be in the device manager.
Mm-hmm.
Then go to network adapters.
Mm-hmm.
Double-click that adapter.
Mm-hmm.
Select the power management tab. And uncheck allow the computer to turn this off this device to save power.
Okay, I'll try that. I know how to get in there because that's how I changed it.
Right.
Yes. All right. I know it's an old. I'm going to buy a new laptop sometime later in the summer, but I didn't know what the problem was.
Yeah,
I will try it.
Okay. Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we see sometimes that some devices don't like to sleep, but
right.
On a laptop, they should.
They should, but it's an old laptop.
Yeah.
And that may be an issue. And, of course, you know, Microsoft isn't supporting Windows 7. They aren't updating Windows 7. It's a real security issue, which is why I'm glad James said he's going to buy a new laptop. But the fact is that it's hard to fix Windows 7 anymore.
And Microsoft has been removing tech notes.
Right.
Which is just disk space.
Yeah, they shouldn't care.
Yeah. So you have to go to, you know, a lot of the other companies are still keeping information alive.
Right. All right. I'm going to read another. I like this one instead. Okay, we'll read this one. On Thursday. And while I'm reading, by the way, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. On Thursday, four U.S. senators called on the Biden administration to establish a 21st-century definition of high-speed broadband of 100 megabits per second, both upstream and downstream. This would be a huge upgrade over the Federal Communications Commission broadband standard of 25 megabits per second downstream and only 3 megabits per second upstream, which was established back in 2015 and never updated by former President Trump's FCC chair, Ajit Pai. The letter was sent to FCC Acting Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel and other federal officials by two Democrats, one independent who caucuses with Democrats, and one Republican. Noting that the pandemic has reinforced the importance of what high-speed broadband and underscored the cost of the persistent digital divide in our country, they wrote, going forward, we should take every effort to spend limited federal dollars on broadband networks capable of providing sufficient download and upload speeds and quality, including low latency, high reliability, and low network jitter for modern and emerging uses like two-way video conferencing, telehealth, remote learning, health IoT, and smart grid applications. Our goal for new deployment should be symmetric speeds of 100 megabits per second, allowing for limited variation when dictated by geography, topography, or unreasonable cost. We should also insist that new networks for certain select values of unreasonable. We should also insist that new networks supported with federal funds meet this higher standard, with limited exceptions for truly hard-to-reach locations. For years, we have seen billions in taxpayer dollars subsidized network deployments that are outdated as soon as they are complete, lacking in capacity and failing to replace inadequate broadband infrastructure. Ask any senior who connects with their physician via telemedicine, any farmer hoping to unlock the benefits of precision agriculture, any student who receives live stream instruction, or any family where both parents telework and multiple children are remote learning, and they will tell you that many networks fail to come close to high speed in the year 2021. For any of these functions, upload speeds far greater than 3 megabits per second are particularly critical. These challenges will not end with the pandemic. Today's offerings, unquote. Today's offerings from cable companies would not meet the 100 megabit per second threshold for uploads, even as gigabit download cable plans from Comcast and Charter come with only 35 megabit upload speeds.
Yep.
The cable industry for years has promised faster upload speeds, but cable speeds are still unbalanced, providing much greater download speeds than upload speeds. By contrast, every plan offered by fiber to the home ISPs meets or exceeds the proposed standard. A serious commitment to symmetrical 100 megabit per second broadband may require a lot more fiber construction across the U.S. The senator's letters didn't quite take a fiber or bus stand, but they do want federal funding in rural areas to support higher upload speeds than what you would normally get with cable. So how's your working from home situation? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve... No, Dave Enright. We don't have Dave Enright. I'm looking right at Michael and saying Dave Enright. With Steve Ray, with Michael Oden, with me, Francesco, who's clearly lost it and may never find it again, and you. It is 31 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Michael Oden.
And at 37 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Snow tonight, 60 degrees on Wednesday. Welcome to Rochester, New York. Before we get back to the phones, I just want to mention that tomorrow night at 9 p.m., we will be in the chat in the Soundbites Lounge at Mastermind Lounge. You will be able to join us. It's very easy. Just head on over to our
website.
Website. I've lost where they. Oh, there it is. It's way up there. It's at soundbites.org/lounge. L-O-U-N-G-E. And at 9 o'clock tomorrow night, there will be a link to the video chat. All you need to do is join us, and we will answer your questions and chit-chat about stuff that's fun, and it'll be a fine time for everybody. We're there for an hour. So if you have a question, don't show up at the end. Show up early. But we're there, soundbites.org/lounge, and you'll be able to join in the festivities. And that's all I have to say about that. Join us in the lounge. And now back to the phones. Our next caller is Matt from Brockport, New York. Hi, Matt. What's up?
Hello, Nick. How are you doing?
Peachy, how are you doing?
I'm good, Nick. I believe, did you go to Greece Arcadia?
Nope.
Aquinas?
Yep.
You went to Aquinas?
I did.
Yeah, I believe my father was your teacher.
Who was your father?
His name is Joe Amoroso.
I know Joe. I know Joe. Yes, he was. Yes. Tell him I said hello. He won't remember me, but tell him I said hello.
No, he does remember you, and I will. And so,
no one can forget you, no matter how hard they try.
All right, Matt, here's the important thing. Do not believe anything that man tells you about my days at Aquinas. Not word one.
Well, now I'm going to talk to him about you, Nick. Listen, I got a question. I don't know if you guys can answer it or not, but I do some home music production out of my house.
Oh, nice.
I was wondering if you guys might be able to give me some advice, or maybe perhaps you could recommend someone that I could talk to. I've got about 10 different questions, and I need about 10 minutes, but some of them I bet you can answer.
I who do I know who does video audio production? I'd have to think about that.
Okay. All right. So my first question is this, Nick. I'm currently using a Dell computer, and my daughter was gifted an iMac. So I'm thinking of making, and she gave the computer to me. So I'm thinking of making the change from the Dell to the iMac. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, some of the system updates on the iMac don't accept some of the equipment that I'm currently using, specifically an audio interface.
Yeah, those are one of the big ones that often break under new OSs.
Okay. So the question is, if I want to run the current Mac operating system and update it and, you know, run all the system updates when I start this baby up, I can go out and get a new audio interface, okay? There's something called a Thunderbolt port.
Yeah, Thunderbolt is high-speed peripherals, and most of the high-end audio interfaces will use Thunderbolt connections.
Okay, so if the Mac that I'm using is a little bit older, I'm not exactly sure how old it is, but I have the specs here. Could you tell me if it's worth it to go out and get a new Thunderbolt port or not? I mean, the iMac that I have has two Thunderbolt ports.
Yeah. We're also seeing some of the newer devices come with USB, especially USB 3.0 Type-C connectors, because that's almost fast enough.
Okay.
But a lot of times it's the drivers for the older audio capture devices that don't work on the newer OSs. DigiDesign is probably one of the biggest companies of audio hardware.
Yep.
Although, there's the one I bought. I bought a... Is that a Sennheiser?
Hold on, he's checking something on his system.
Behringer. I bought a Behringer USB audio interface.
A Behringer?
Yeah, because I don't have that big a needs. It had left and right jacks on it.
That's, really
that's what I
needed.
Yeah. You don't need a whole lot for radio.
Right.
Okay. So I was looking at one called the Focusrite. I think it's Focusrite. Anyway, the refurbished Macs, what do you guys know about those? Are they? I've read great things about them.
It depends on why they're refurbished, which you never can tell. Many times it's a customer bought it, didn't like it, and returned it. And Apple cleans them up, and that'd be fine. Sometimes it's a customer bought it, had horrible problems with it, had a bunch of repairs done, got fed up, and returned it. And those are the ones you don't want.
Right.
But there's no way to tell.
Absolutely. Okay.
But in general, what you want to do is if you're looking to buy a new device to plug, a new audio device to plug into this iMac, first you need to know which iMac it is. You need to know which version of the operating system you're running. And then you need to find a device that has drivers for that version of the operating system.
And I'm seeing here that the Focusrite Clarets are all USB. They're not Thunderbolt.
Okay, so let me ask you this, guys, because a couple of months ago I tried to get this computer going, and I ran a system update, and it changed from, don't quote me on this, I haven't worked with Mac in a long time, Catalina, okay, and it went to a new one. What's the new one?
Big Sur. So it sounds like you did an upgrade, not an update.
Okay.
So you jumped from Windows 7 to Windows 10, basically.
Basically.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. Now, how can I tell if my refurbished computer can handle this new thing?
You have to know what model it is, and you have to check the maximum OS that model can support from the spec sheets.
And can you tell that from about this Mac?
You can tell what model it is from there, yeah.
Right.
But you can't tell what maximum OS it supports without going to another program. I use one called Mac Tracker. Which lists all the specs for all the different models, and maximum RAM, maximum OSs, things like that.
So from the Apple menu in the upper left corner, one of the choices is about this Mac.
Yep, got that.
Okay, and that will tell you what Mac you have.
It gives you the model, gives you the processor, gives you the RAM, gives you the storage, things like that.
Gotcha. Okay.
And that's the info you'll need to know what version of operating system you're best running.
Generally, what we have been seeing is that especially Big Sur, but in some respects also Catalina, it really wants to have 16 gigs of RAM, and it really likes to have an SSD, not a spinning drive.
Okay, I only have 8.
Is it a 21-inch or 27-inch?
21.5.
Those are hard to upgrade. 27s have a door on the back. The 21s do not.
Right.
But they can go to 16 gigs. You just have to take it completely apart, which not easy,
not
for the faint of heart. Yeah.
Now, can I run Catalina?
Sure.
Can you, I mean, so in other words, I can bypass the updates?
Well, the updates you should install because it fixes problems. It's the upgrades you shouldn't install because that makes big changes.
Oh, okay. All right. So I should stay with Catalina and not go to Big Sur if I only have 8 gigs.
Yeah.
Right.
In fact, I almost would recommend staying with the High Sierra, which is still new enough to not be a big processor and memory demand on the older machines.
Okay, cool. High Sierra is the one that you would recommend then?
10.13, which will work on most computers up to 2017, I think, 2018.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, gentlemen. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. Sure. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Yeah, it's hard. You need, sadly, you need all that kind of information before you can really know what's going on. Yeah. You got to know what model, you got to know what processor, you got to know.
It's not quite as bad as it is in the Windows world where there's a million different brands and a million configurations to know if you're compatible with Windows 10. But, there, you know, there's hundreds of Mac models, and so it's still a pain.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Rich. What's up?
Hi, guys. Quick question on routers. Is there a way to upgrade the version that you have other than purchasing another whole new unit?
Yes.
I have maybe a TP-Link TP-Link Archer something AC 1750, and I think it's version, I want to say I have version 2 on it or something like that.
You can upgrade the firmware, which is basically the operating system inside the router, to fix problems and close holes that have been found in firmwares. But you generally cannot upgrade the processor. You can't upgrade to better wireless. So, you know, that's an AC router. The 1750 is basically the maximum theoretical bandwidth by bonding all the antennas together. So you couldn't get any higher speed without upgrading to a newer router.
Okay.
But most routers have an upgrade procedure for upgrading the firmware to fix bugs and problems. In fact, there's been a surge lately in malicious attacks against routers trying to take control of your router to use to attack other people.
So what you're saying is not necessarily going to you don't go to another version. You just upgrade the firmware.
Well, yeah, it'd be version 4.7 instead of the 4.6 you've got now.
Okay. All right. Well, and then, because every time I sign into it or try to get information on it, it asks me what version I have.
Yeah, and there should be usually an administration screen that tells you that information in the router web interface.
I'll have to look at that because I don't think I know I've looked to see what the firmware definition is, or whatever you want to call it,
right,
what the name of it is, and then just see if there's another one beyond that.
Right. Take a look at the main screen. It often will give you that kind of information. The other thing you want to be aware of is I hope you've changed the default password.
Oh yes, most definitely.
Good.
I've done all that security type stuff and everything else to not be able to get into it, if you will.
Good. In that case, you're halfway there. You do want to update to the latest and greatest of everything, but by looking through your various screens and paying attention to what is in them, it will tell you that information. You just have to, see it.
Okay.
Basically.
I guess I didn't think about that or looking at that, and just knowing that, the version on the outside of the box or whatever you want to call it is this, and just looking for that one every time I go to look for an update.
Well, okay, yeah. So on the outside of the box, there'll be a V1, V2, V3.
Correct.
That's important, too.
Okay.
That tells you what sort of what generation it is. And I see that the Archer is up to C7 V5,
right?
Okay.
Whatever that means.
So
when you're looking for a firmware update, you have to be sure you find the firmware update for the exact specific model and submodel and sub-submodel.
Right, and I don't, and that's what I'm saying. That's where my original question was. I can't upgrade that version, if you will, or that machine without buying a new machine, maybe.
Well, that's the hardware model. The software version you can upgrade.
You should be able to upgrade it, and in fact, you should be able to do it directly from the web interface itself.
Okay.
In general, most of them, and again, very old ones, no, but most of them will have a screen you can go to via your web browser. And once you log in as the administrator, one of the tabs or sections or however it's set out will be an administration section. And one of the choices under there will be to update the firmware or to update the software itself.
Okay, you know what? I think I have seen that.
There you go. That's where you do that.
I don't think there was anything there was firmware, but I don't think there was anything else.
That's fine. Firmware is really what you're looking for.
Right, okay. All right. Well, great. Thank you.
There you go. Have fun.
Have a great one.
Yep. And yep. TP-Link is one of the better brands that do make firmware updates available. A huge problem in the especially the home market are the cheap knockoff routers you buy at the big box store for $20. They'll never be updated. They're full of holes, default passwords that you can't change, and the bad guys are using them to create what we call botnets that are then attack other people in your name. So if the police ever traced a public attack, it comes back to your house because your router was involved in it.
Right. In fact, I got a notice from my router company the other day that I had an update.
Yep.
So I went, oh my gosh, I better go do it. And I realized, wait a minute, I just updated it yesterday. Because I do that regularly because I was a systems administrator. Yep. So I looked, and indeed, I was already on the...
You already had it, yeah. So when you're setting up your router, please fill out the registration links or card. Give them an email address that you'll get in touch with. They can email you when new versions come out. There has been a call in the industry for routers to automatically upgrade themselves, but a lot of IT people don't like that because the IT people want to be in control of the updates. But for a home user, it should update itself.
Yeah, it really should. Yeah. I agree with that entirely.
Yeah.
I want to do it myself.
Yep.
So there should be a chance. There should be an option to uncheck automatic updates.
Yeah. So download and notify.
Right.
And so the notify, but the now again for the home users, all those fake notifications are out about you should do this, you should do that.
Right.
So
but if the notification is we've already downloaded it, go to your router and click the button.
Yeah.
That's a little different.
Yep. And that I think that's partly why a lot of the router companies are going to apps on your smartphone, because then that app can give you the notification and it's not a random email or a random website telling you there's a notification.
Right. And we were talking about this earlier. We hate those.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it makes support.
When you're an administrator, it's horrible, but a home user, it works good.
It works good. If you know enough to use it and do it, then it's fine. But if you go to the store, if you go to Steve's store for support and say, I need you to update my router. Well, whose phone do I use? I got to install an app on somebody's phone.
Yep.
Whose phone do I use?
Oh, that person's not here anymore. Well, I'm going to need their phone.
They're going to need their phone. That's right. So
I don't have that phone anymore. That's a story I started telling this morning. Someone had forgotten their Google password. I got a new computer, didn't know they had a password. So we're trying to do the forgot password link, and it says, okay, your recovery address is AOL. We'll send instructions there. I don't have an AOL account. I got rid of that 10 years ago. No, you stopped using it 10 years ago, but you never got rid of it, and you never told Google not to use it, and so that's where they're going to send the code. And Google is very hard to get your password back because so many people have broken into Google accounts saying they're I'm really Joe Smith, and I forgot my password. Give it to me.
Right.
So it's tough. So when you do change, we're telling people earlier to change their Frontier account, make sure you go back to those old services and tell Google, tell Yahoo that you've changed your email address and you're changing your recovery address.
Here's a tip. We've told you 100 million times to use a password manager. Most password managers have a notes field.
Yep.
In that notes field, type in your recovery address.
Yep.
And then you can do a search on that, search for AOL, and among those things, you'll see your recovery addresses. All right, that music tells me we are done for another week. Holy cow, time sure flies when you have fun. And we hit 100.
Nice.
We hit 100 votes in the poll. Thank you very much. Doesn't mean you should stop voting, particularly those of you who are listening over the archives. You should still vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. But we are done for another week. I really want to thank Michael Oden, who stepped in as Dave Enright is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm not sure why, but I do. I'll thank him. Thanks, Steve. And, oh, for donut. Thank you, Steve. Steve. I'm Nick Francesco. We want to thank each and every one of you who called in. We apologize to those to whom we did not get. Once again, you got to call earlier and more often. Chicago-style calling. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.